What do teepees have to do with memes and cultural evolution? Well, quite a lot, according to Johnny Hughes. Hughes is the author of On the Origin of Teepees, The Evolution of Ideas and Ourselves. And he tells Steve Paulson he is a big believer in meme theory.
I think there's a lot to be said for meme theory if you approach it in the correct way and you frame it in the right way. More than anything, the value of using meme theory is that it can reveal an awful lot about not only our culture, humanity, but also about ourselves, because humanity is the stuff that we're surrounded by. And, you know, if we understand humanity better, we might understand ourselves better.
Well, let's talk about how we see the world if, as you say in your book, we put on a different pair of goggles, what you would call looking at the world through a meme's eye view. What do you see?
It's a bit like there's an optical illusion where you see two faces in profile facing each other. And then in between, if you stare at it long enough, you'll pull focus a little bit and you'll see a vase or a vase in between. Now, when you put on your meme goggles, what you're doing is you're switching to that vase. You lose sight of the people, and what you see are the ideas, the items of culture that surround us the whole time. They become your focus. And the people effectively, and it sounds awful to say this, but the people really just become, at the moment, 7 billion minds that will host these ideas.
You're saying people don't create ideas. They actually are just there to sort of carry out the ideas?
In theory, that's the case, that you could get a decent amount of cultural evolution without any kind of mindful input from an individual person. Now, that is an extreme case again, and I don't think that is the case. I think that there is a space for creativity and human creativity in meme theory. So we can have geniuses. It's not the total end of all human history. There could be a place for human ingenuity in a meme-driven cultural evolution.
Now, you did a curious thing as part of writing this book. You went on a road trip to America. In fact, your road trip started in all places, at the Mall of America in Bloomington, Minnesota, the world's largest shopping mall. What were you looking for there?
That was sort of unintentional. I knew I wanted to start in Minnesota. I wanted to go across the Great Plains. And the reason I wanted to go across the Great Plains is because I was looking for a cultural equivalent to Darwin's Galapagos Islands. And I deduced, it turned out to be quite a good thought, that the tribal lands of the Great Plains Indians, because each tribe was slightly isolated from each other, sort of stood as a kind of mind island, if you like. And therefore, together, you had an archipelago, a whole selection of islands that might show the sorts of evolution that Darwin saw in the Galapagos finches and the tortoises that he discovered. So I wanted to go across the Great Plains, and the best entry port, the airport, was Minneapolis in Minnesota. So I landed there, and of course, the Mall of America is tantalizingly close to the airport. So we hired a car and went straight there to get a load of provisions. And it actually became quite a feature in the first part of the book, because I knew it was big, but it's enormous, that place. And if you want to express what is on offer in the human world, you can go to the Mall of America and find pretty much all of it.
Are you talking about through the stores there? I mean, through what we shop for?
Yeah, there's all the products. But there's also all the books, of course. There's some bookshops that'll hold a whole vast amount of extra detail. And there's just the activities that we engage ourselves with. There's so much to do there. You can go swimming with sharks. You can buy a ticket to go and see a wedding, which is acted out every night. And I think that's quite amazing. There's the big theme park in the middle of everything. So there's places for you to learn stuff, to enjoy yourself, to be entertained. It's the entire world in microcosm. What I decided it was effectively paradise, in a way, in that here I am, a member of a species, and that place caters for my every need that I can possibly imagine. It's just the right temperature, it's got the right humidity, it's not full of disease, as far as I could tell, and it's got as much food and water as I could possibly want, and then all of these other things to engage my mind. So it's kind of like what an ecologist would call the idealized niche of our species.
One thing that you did as you were then traveling through the Great Plains of America is you came upon the idea of the teepee. And in fact, you seem to be obsessed with the evolution of the teepee. And of course, your book is called On the Origin of Teepees. What was it about teepees that fascinated you so much?
So in going to the Great Plains and looking for this cultural archipelago, this cultural string of islands, I wanted to find a species of idea that was represented on every island, but that was slightly different on every island that you visited. And that's exactly what Darwin found in the Galapagos with his finches. So he went to the Galapagos, discovered a whole load of islands, discovered a whole load of types of finch, little birds, and each one of them was slightly different to the neighboring finch. And it was that blindingly obvious sort of evolutionary radiation, they'd call it, a descent, which creates a whole load of new, very similar species from one ancestral species, that triggered all the ideas of natural selection in his mind. So I was looking for an equivalent in the cultural world, and teepees are just the obvious candidate for the cultural finch.
Because there are different kinds of teepees, or teepees can be built in different ways.
Yeah, I thought if there's anything to this meme theory, then if you have a sprinkling of islands like that, and you have a species of idea on the different islands, it should be slightly different. That's just the way a biologist would look at things, if there were direct equivalents. And sure enough, when you turn up and you go and talk to the Native Americans, or you go down to the museums and have a look at the mock-ups of the original Sioux teepee and Blackfoot teepee and Crow teepee, you do find that they're all slightly different. And you can build a sort of taxonomy of teepees, just as Darwin did a taxonomy of the different birds that he found on the Galapagos.
Can you actually trace the evolution of teepees, kind of the original teepee, and then how it evolved over the centuries?
In a way. I mean, the exciting thing was that I discovered after a while that there are fundamentally two types of teepee. There is a three-pole teepee, which has a tripod. You put three poles up, and then you build the other poles on top. And then there's a four-pole teepee, which, of course, has got four poles. And there's just no way that a Sioux Indian would ever build a four-pole teepee. And there's no way that a Crow would ever entertain doing a three-pole teepee. So there's a kind of taxonomic split, as a biologist would see it, right there. That's a fundamental characteristic that is either one or the other. And so that's a branching situation. In history, at some point, one of them must have diverged off the other. And you can come up with a guess of what that would be because of the way that they're distributed on the plains and because of the history we know of the Plains Indians and how they migrated onto the plains and how they moved.
So why would certain Native Americans build three-pole teepees and others build four-pole teepees?
Well, if you ask the Native Americans, they say it was ever thus and, you know, it's been handed down to us. Or they might get more spiritual and say it's the way that nature wants us to build teepees. Whenever I asked a Native American, a tribal member that I came across, how long have you been building these teepees for? They would say forever, which is fine. You know, I totally respect that. But if I wanted to look at the tribes as though I was a Western historian, if you like, some of the existing tribes that we have these days arrived on the plains before others. And you could imagine that therefore they must have adopted the teepee before the later arrivals, because the teepee is an essential shelter for plains life. You can't live up there unless you have something like a teepee. It's a piece of genius itself. It's the perfect solution to a permanent life on the plains.
So are there certain advantages to building either a three-pole or a four-pole teepee?
There are, yeah. And again, this is quite hard to get out of people because they think their own way is the best. But a three-pole teepee, I've got to say, is a better design than a four-pole. I'll say that now. And the reason for that is that three-pole teepees, you can erect yourself. You don't need two people. You tie them together and then you sort of pull them up, whereas a four-pole is too heavy to do that. They come down quicker. And also, they tend to be slightly more squat and lean a little bit more into the wind, just because of the design of having a tripod rather than four poles up there. So if you're in the windier parts of the plains, the geography of the plains means that that's the eastern side, which is where the Sioux were. They were there with their three-pole teepees. It's just a better design, if you like. It's a fitter design for that particular environment to have a tripod rather than a four-pole teepee.
Okay, but that obviously raises the question then, why did anyone then develop the four-pole teepee?
Exactly. So the logical conclusion is that the three-pole came from the four-pole.
But then why was the four-pole abandoned?
Because we don't question the ideas that we inherit. And if it's associated deeply with your cultural sense and with your spiritual sense, then you would never change it. It's part of you. And we're all like that. We tend to keep things. I think that I say vase the correct way. But I don't. Of course I don't. I just say vase in a way. There's no progress in going from vase to vase or vase to vase.
So good ideas don't necessarily win out over the long term.
No, and I think this is a sort of application of meme theory. If you start actually thinking objectively, which of these are the good ones and which of these are the bad ones. Maybe we can help, maybe we can foster or husband a sort of community of ideas that will do well because we help them along, we give them the right incentives. At the moment, we're just faced with millions upon millions of ideas and versions of ideas, and none of them have a kind of quality judgment associated with them. So we'll just inherit them blindly, whether it's a good idea or not.
Johnny Hughes is the author of On the Origin of Teepees, The Evolution of Ideas and Ourselves. He spoke with Steve Paulson.